Are you as familiar with the law as you should be? Test yourself by joining in with The Law Game, an entertainment in which three well-known personalities play judge and pronounce their verdicts on fictitious law cases. And here to keep everything above board is your chairman, Shaw Taylor.
Good evening and welcome to the start of yet another new series of The Law Game. For any possible first-time listeners, let me tell you how the game is played. Our radio drama company will act out three fictitious law cases based on actual ones that were argued on the same points of law. Then, when I think the actors have given you enough clues and information, I will halt the histrionics with this bell. And that is when our panel will pontificate on who won the case and why. Despite rumours of raging inflation, I'll start the panel off with the same 50 points as usual, which they can use to bet on their decisions. And then I will match their bets if they pick the winning side, and I'll raid the coffers to pay out odds of 2-1 should they give me the right legal reasons. And the three judges in jeopardy tonight are Barry Cryer, Neris Hughes, and Ian Hislop. Barry Cryer, writer and raconteur. Delighted you found the time in your busy schedule to join us once again. Since you were last here, have you had any clashes with the law, Barry?
I was called as a witness, which has never happened to me before.
Oh.
Since we'd last did this programme together. I was in pantomime during the miners' strike, and a gentleman came to see us from the NUM to talk about families and how they were suffering during the strike, which interested me very much indeed. So I had tea with him, a very honest, bluff Yorkshire soul, who talked to us and moved us and then moved right through the pantomime company and took money off all of us and told us of the long journeys. He was always exhausted, this man, and it really felt for him. I thought, this man's going to have a nervous breakdown. He's doing such a great job. And we found out he was an actor. No offence to our company here. He was a wonderful con man, if you can say it's wonderful capitalising on a thing like that. And we were all called to Southwark Crown Court and I went into the box. And you know, you've seen all these films and television programmes and people saying the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And I found myself having to say it in real life. And I couldn't get it right. I made three attempts at it. The whole truth, the truth, and it was amazing. Yeah. So that was my brush with the law. I met this con man. And if I meet him again, I won't answer for the consequences.
Did you get your money back?
No. Oh, no, there's no refund.
Ooh.
No, nothing on the empties.
Now then, welcome back to someone who needs no introduction. Neris Hughes. Neris, any offences you would like taken into account?
A couple of years back, Marie Claire, my daughter, and I found our poor little cat in the road, all kind of squashed. He'd been run over by a motorbike, and he was in a terrible state, and we were sobbing and crying, and we took him along to the local vet. And there was nowhere to park at all, so we parked on double yellow lines. Not only double yellow lines, but on the curb and double yellow lines. And we sobbing ran into the vets and we said, look, this is our cat. And they x-rayed him and they put him in a little cage and they said, he's very badly smashed up, his pelvis is all gone. And if you leave him overnight, we've got to test if he can wee. Because if he could wee, you're looking a bit fastidious there, Sean.
I'm just fascinated, yes.
It means that his bladder wouldn't be punctured and he'd be all right. So we left him there overnight, you see. And we came out of the vet sobbing again. We couldn't see for tears. And there were these two huge policemen standing by our car. And we thought, oh, no, they're going to tow it away. And we went up and the police said, now, what are you doing? And then they saw us crying. We said, our little cat, he's going to die. And he's in there. And they said, oh, Neris, what a shame. Don't worry, because my dog went to that vet and he made him all right again. And he not only didn't book us, but put us in the car and sent us on our way with good will.
It's all very well, but what happened in the night?
Oh, the cat! The cat. Well, what happened was, you see, it's a lovely, happy ending, this story, because we went the next day, and they said, I'm so sorry, but your cat hasn't weed. And we were just going to go out of the vets, and we turned round and he'd done a great big puddle all over the cage. And his bladder was all right, so we took him home and he's as right as rain now. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, if you told me that I would spend the whole of the first law game listening to about whether a cat's urinary tract was going to work or not, I wouldn't.
Not so much a monologue as a catalogue.
Well, let's come to the third member of the panel. Ian Hislop, first time on the law game, editor of the magazine Private Eye. Now, I doubt whether you're a stranger to the entanglements with the law. Have you got one that wouldn't be too painful to talk about?
I suppose most of them are painful. There was one when I first got the job as editor of the magazine. It was in my first week, and I went into court against Robert Maxwell and lost £250,000. In a lot of jobs, that would be an excuse to fire you. On Private Eye, this was taken that I'd finally matured as a journalist. But the only good thing from it was that I managed to get a joke on News at 10, which is quite an achievement, because the cameras came and filmed afterwards, and I had to admit that I'd paid a fat check to a fat check. Perhaps the most expensive joke ever.
I can see we've got a very experienced panel in front of us tonight when it comes to the law. Now we've heard from them, let's have the turn of the Radio Drama Company as they lead us into tonight's first case. It's set in a working men's club as the Sunday lunchtime cabaret is just ending.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. That was Speaky the Fire Eater, folks. The only one I know who can cook her food after she's eaten it. Do you like that? Please yourselves. Anyway, that's the end of the show, folks, and seeing as it's dinner time, and I'm sure you're all anxious to get to the bar for a bite to drink. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Who's next?
I see you sell real ale here. I'll have a pint, please.
Certainly, sir. One pint of real ale coming up. Well, you're new here, aren't you? Can't remember serving you before.
I only became a member 4 days ago. This is my first Sunday.
Here you are, then.
Have one for yourself, love.
Oh, that's very kind of you. I'll have a gin and tonic. My name's Glynis, by the way.
Right.
Most of us here call her Guinness, because she's good for us.
Save the jokes for the show, Cuthbert.
Hey, I'm Philip Lane. I'm a new member. I enjoyed your act.
Did you hear that, Glynis? At last we have a gentleman with taste. Can I buy you a drink?
No, it's my shout. What are you having?
Well, thanks, sir. Me usual.
That's 60 pence, please. Thanks.
Oh, and I'll have a packet of crisps, too. And one for you, too, Cuthbert, eh?
Why not? Let's push the boat out while you're being generous.
There you are then, gents. Two packets of crisps, fresh out of a brand new box. 46p, please, 23 each.
That's two 20s, two 2s and two 1s. Yeah, exact money.
Oh, much appreciated. Running short of small change.
Just a second. Are you sure that's the right price?
Yes, it says so on the wall. Look, crisps, 23p, same price as it's been for months.
Aye, but those packets come with a discount. Look, it's printed on the packet. Special offer, 3p off. Now, surely they should be 20p.
Look, it's club rules. We don't give discounts at the bar. No matter what it says on the packets or bottles, we have our set price and we stick to it.
Are you sure you can legally do that?
Eh?
I mean, you're charging full price for something you say costs the same as normal, even though the packet says differently.
Look, I'm not making any money out of it. It all goes straight into the club funds. They're the rules, like it or not.
Well, I don't like it. As far as I can see, I've been cheated. And unless you refund the difference to me now, I'll have the club taken to court under the Trades Descriptions Act.
You what?
For such a piffling amount? You've got to be joking.
I'll leave the jokes to you, Cuthbert. I'm not being taken for a fool. It's not the money. It's the principle.
Well, not so much the money as the principle. So, the club was taken to court under the Trade Descriptions Act. Did it win the case or did it not? Barry, what do you think?
My instinctive reaction to that is because it was a club. I think a club has a sort of sovereign territory in law in that respect, and they wouldn't be governed by a discount that would apply generally in a shop or somewhere else. I think that the club would win that because they could do what they liked on their own premises.
Oh, that's interesting, just because it's a club.
I like the nice, controversial political note of the barmaid being called Glynis. I thought that was very interesting.
Neris Hughes, what do you think?
Well, I have got to agree with Barry here. I thought being a club, it would be exceptional circumstances, because what a peculiar guy. He offered a drink to Glynis, and he offered a drink to the terrible comic. And so he's quite generous, wasn't he? It wasn't as if he was mean.
No, he said it was the principle.
It was the principle. The thing that we didn't ascertain, really, although it said crisps 23, it didn't ascertain what the original price in the shops was. It could have been that 23 was having got the three off. It could have been 26p and 23.
But I'm with Barry, I think. I think a club tends to fix its own prices.
Well, I've got two replies there. What about yours, Ian?
I think I've got to agree again. I mean, usually when someone says it's not the money, it's the principle, it's always the money. certainly is in my experience. I don't know, sorry, it's a very odd position, having to judge anything rather than standing there. My guess is this man's an undercover agent for someone. He joins the club 4 days previously, turns up, has a silly name, buys people drinks, and then is thoroughly unpleasant. I think it's very peculiar. I would, if I'd been anywhere near the court, have called him a vexatious litigant and told him to get lost.
All right, then, so you all find exactly the same. The club would get away with it. What do you think the law is, Ian, in this particular instance?
Now, the law is usually in direct inverse proportion to common sense, so I would think the law would support the man.
Oh, you think the law would support the man, but you, personally, fine for the club.
Yeah, and the court might do if they were being human.
Right, all right. So all three of you are fining for the club, but how many points are you going to bet on this? Let's start with Barry Cryer.
I'm going to do 15 of my 50 on this, I feel so strongly 15? About. Yes, yes.
Neris?
You're quite so strong. I think 10.
Uh-huh. Ian, you're finding the same as the other two?
Yeah, 10.
Three of you fine for the club. Are you right or are you wrong? The club was found not guilty. The trade description's out. They said the Trade Descriptions Act relates only to transactions of a commercial nature, not to transactions with members in members' clubs. So, Barry and Neris, you both get the double points for that. Ian, I'm afraid not, because you really said the court would fine for the man. So, Barry.
How many have I got, Shaw?
Well, I'm going to double your 15 points, and I'll give you 30 points, takes you up to 80 points you've got to play with. Neris, I'm going to double your 10 up to 20, gives you 70 points. We can only give you single scores, Ian, so it's your 10 points.
I'm used to losing in legal games, Barry.
60 you've got. Barry's in the lead as we move on to our next case. And this one is set in court, but we do make the disclaimer that our court procedure can't be strictly accurate due to the fact that the case was based on a case that took 4 days, and I've only got 4 minutes. So it concerns a car owner who is dissatisfied with his recent purchase. But all is not what it seems, so listen very carefully as the defendant is being questioned by the counsel for the plaintiff.
Miss Matthews, what exactly is your job with Sedgwick Used Cars Limited?
I'm their receptionist come telephonist.
I see. So you deal with people rather than cars?
Yes, but I'm around cars all day long. I see them being repaired in the workshop, and I see the salesman selling them.
But you yourself never get involved in either the mechanics or the actual selling?
No, that's true.
And am I right in assuming you've never been to evening classes or any other course on, say, car maintenance or even salesmanship?
No.
Then why, when my client made it known he was looking to buy a good second-hand car, did you offer to find one for him?
Well, because he was a good friend and my next-door neighbour, and I wanted to help him if I could.
Do you remember your exact words to him at the time?
No, not exactly. I just said that being in the trade, as it were, I possibly could find him the sort of car he wanted at the kind of price he wanted to pay.
And how did he react to that offer?
He hinted about offering me some form of reward if I did get the right car for him. He said he'd take me out for a big slap-up meal, but I refused. I said I didn't want anything for my trouble, I was just doing it as a friend.
On the face of it, a commendable act.
Yes.
But wasn't my client very specific about the car he was after?
Oh, yes, he told me the make, model and year, but he wasn't fussy about the colour. Said if he didn't like the colour, he could always get it resprayed.
Did he not also say that he didn't want a car that had been involved in an accident?
He did mention that in passing.
Please tell the court how you came by the car you recommended to my client.
Yes, well, a man came along to Sedgwick's to sell us the car, and the manager, who usually dealt with such things, was out on a test drive with a customer. So I got chatting to the man, and he seemed to have the very car that Richard wanted.
So, instead of asking him to wait for your manager, you asked someone to look after the office while you drove the car round to your friend and neighbour, Richard Thomas.
Yes.
What did you know of the man with the car? Had you ever seen him before?
No. No, but he looked honest enough, and he showed me over the car, which, as far as I could tell, it was in very good condition.
That's with your admitted limited knowledge of such things.
Yes.
Did you ask whether the car had ever been involved in an accident, as my client had briefed you?
No. It didn't look as if it had, and it never came up in the conversation. It looked as if it had been very well kept.
Something you now know not to have been the case.
Yes.
The car was in appalling condition and fell apart very soon after Richard Thomas had bought it, on your recommendation.
Well, I recommended with the best of intentions.
Which is no consolation when my client lost £2,500 for a car which had been shoddily put back together after a serious crash, and then painted over to appear in a better condition than it was. Why did you not ask one of the mechanics where you worked to at least cast a cursory glance over it?
Well, I was going to, but as I thought I was sort of poaching the car away from Sedgwick so Richard could have it, it would have been wrong, or at least unethical.
You talk about ethics when you lulled Richard Thomas into a false sense of security so that he spent such a large sum of money on virtually a worthless vehicle? You call that ethical? It was gross negligence on your part, Miss Matthews. And you are, in my opinion, liable for the money my client lost.
That, Mr. Prendergast, is for the court to decide.
Oh.
Well, that was the counsel's opinion, panel. But what did the court have to say about it? What did it decide? Under the circumstances that you've heard, could Miss Matthews be made to pay for Mr. Thomas's loss? What do you think, Neris?
Absolutely not. No, I don't think so.
You don't think
certainly
so.
Not. I think anybody who buys a second-hand car is taking a risk. And you've got to test it for yourself. I mean, I think the man who she poached it for was a bit foolish not to have it tested himself.
You think he shouldn't have trusted her?
He shouldn't, no. He knew that she was a friend who was a receptionist there. And he knew that she wasn't sort of in the know about the mechanical side. And I think he was a bit of a fool himself, and she certainly shouldn't be liable. And I don't think he should have even brought the case. I'm sure they would have said that it wasn't her fault.
So she'd get off?
Oh, definitely.
Right, fair enough. Ian, what do you think?
I don't know, really. I think people who do buy cars probably should take some care. I think I probably agree with you. I think she probably got off.
Shouldn't she have taken more care, though, don't you think?
Oh, for all sorts of reasons, she was unethical. I think that was her word, in stealing business off the firm and trying to do a friend a favour. But that's all in the realm of the firm and her. And the transaction between her and
Mr. Thomas,
the man who bought it, seemed to be, you said, get me a car, she got him a car. You know, he paid. I can't see that she should therefore have to pay him back.
All right. Reasonable. Let's go on to Barry.
Yes, I agree entirely. I think Richard Thomas, sorry, should have... should have checked out the details in every in the context of common sense and logic and ethics and everything else. We would all agree on what the situation is, but in law I think there's not a leg to stand on at all. It's silly fool. Never liked the man anyway.
Fair enough. Now let's see if you'll put your points where you think your judgment lies. Neris, how many points will you spend? You've got 70 to spend.
I think I'll go 20.
You'll go 20 of those, will you? Right. Ian, you've only got 60 points, but you could make up on this, you never know.
Another brave 10.
Another brave 10.
Cautious man.
Barry, you're way up there. You've got 80 points. How many will you bet?
25.
Bold fellow. Right. You all bet that Miss Matthews won. Miss Matthews sadly lost the case.
No.
Yep.
That's outrageous.
She had to compensate the neighbour for his loss. The judge said that she'd acted as Mr. Thomas's agent in this. She had represented Mr. Thomas in buying this car, and as such, she owed him duty of care. Although she received no reward for her services, she'd been in breach of that duty of care in not establishing more about the car before recommending it, so therefore, she had to stump up and pay him.
Who is this judge? We ought to know these people.
That's awful, because
I think you're much better, but let's look at the scores, see how you're doing. First of all, Neris, you have 50 points.
Oh,
Ian, you have 50
you.
Points. And Barry, you have 55 points. So even your 25 leads you still in the lead.
Oh.
Now, third and final one coming up, we go to prison, where a man on remand is having the first visit from his wife.
You're looking terrible, Jack.
We're soul-destroying in here, Sylv. I just can't take being locked up for something I didn't do.
But you can't prove it. Not unless they find that old bloke you stopped to ask the way.
All he's got to do is confirm the time and place and will you be on your way to suing for wrongful arrest?
No, they probably have found him and warned him off.
Do you really think they'd do that?
I wouldn't put it past him, Sylv. Just because I look a bit like the photo foot they put on.
Well, the night watchman did pick you out of the line.
The robbery was after midnight. It was pitch black. I doubt whether he'd spot his own mother in that light. You know what I think? I think he nicked the stuff himself and was looking for a scapegoat.
Oh, Jack. Well, I'm doing all I can. I phoned the solicitor this morning and he says he's pressing for an early trial date.
Early? How soon does he reckon?
He says with a bit of luck, 3 months.
3 months? And he calls that luck? You should try living in this place. It seems to speed things up a bit. Oh, I've only been here a week and I've not slept a wink yet. And I've hardly eaten at all.
Oh, you must eat, love. Did you tell them about your ulcer?
Yeah, as soon as I came in, they put me down for a special diet.
So why aren't you eating?
Oh, because it tastes like blotting paper. Believe me, Sylv, when I get out of here, I'll never make jokes about your cooking again.
Well, look, why don't I have some food sent in?
Sent in? What do you think this place is, a hotel? Here, you eat what they give you or you get nothing.
But as long as it's paid for by relatives or friends, how can they object?
Well, they would. You can bet your life they would. I haven't seen anyone else have food from outside.
Well, most of them are convicted criminals, aren't they? I mean, you're only on remand. You haven't been tried yet. There's really no reason why I can't find a restaurant nearby that can deliver decent food for you.
No, you'd have to get permission from the prison authorities first, and that means a long rigmarole through the legal channels. The solicitor would have to make an official application.
I'm sure he'd do it if I asked him.
All right. But if I'm honest with myself, I'll have to admit I still don't think the governor here will allow it.
But he's only an employee of the prison authorities. I mean, his job is to administer the laws, not make them. Look, if he puts the block on it, we'll go all the way and take him, the prison authorities, and if necessary, even the Secretary of State to court.
I'll tell you just a little bit more, panel, and that is that the application to have the food sent in was rejected, and Jack's solicitor put the case before the court. But did he win or did he not? What do you think, Ian? Now, this might well be something that you'll come up against in the future. What do you think?
Again, it strikes me this is sort of fairly trivial stuff. The bloke's in jail for 3 months and he doesn't like the food. Would a court really sympathise when his wife, through the solicitor, says I wanted to send him in my cooking?
I mean, some people lived the life of Riley, I believe. I mean, there were cases where food was sent in and quite a few well-known names sat eating it very happily when everybody else was on prison fare.
I would think the governor got away with it.
You do? It was rejected. All right, fine. Barry, what do you think?
I think a governor has got governance, is there such a word? And
it's
his own
one.
Nick. I think that would operate under the conditions of his own prison. I don't think they'd get further with that.
Even though in law it may well be that a remand prisoner can have his own food sent in.
Yeah, I think it wouldn't get through. I think the governor's governance, as I say, and with, you know, crisps at 23p a packet. I mean,
so
no, I don't think they'd get anywhere with this in law.
What about you, Neris?
If it was somebody who it was life and death to have a special diet, I'm sure the governor would make sure that he had that special diet. But as it's an ulcer, I think the prison food, as near as damn it, would be all right. It wouldn't kill him, would it?
Do you feel that Jack won or lost his case?
I would say probably that the governor won.
In other words, Jack lost.
Jack lost just.
Just. Let's see how that shows in the betting. Once again, all three have gone for the same answer, that Jack would have lost. Ian, how many of your points will you bet? You've got 50 to bet with.
I'll bet 10 again.
10 again, you will bet.
Massive confidence in the legal system.
Right. Barry, what will you bet of your 55?
I'll go 10. I'll go 10.
You'll go 10. So you know that at least you can beat Ian, can't you? Because you're 5 points ahead. So, Neris, it's down to you as to whether...
I'm very indecisive here. I think 5.
Oh, honestly, dear. Chicken.
It could have been your opportunity to sweep the board, because all three of you find that Jack lost his case, and in fact, Jack did lose his case.
Silly Neris.
It used to be possible for remand prisoners to receive food from outside, but the new prison amendment rules of 1988 abolished the privilege because it was said it provided a channel for smuggling in drugs and other unauthorised articles.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure what other unauthorised articles...
Well, you could send a file in with a cake concealed inside it.
Who wants to file your nails in prison?
Under N.
Let's have a look at the final scores. We find that, Neris, you missed the chance. You could have beaten Barry to it, but in fact, this week's winner is Barry with 65 points. Well done.
Oh.
I'd like to thank the team that made this possible. And that, I'm sorry to say, is all the cases we have time for tonight. But don't rush away just yet, because before we part, I want to give you just a hint of one of next week's cases. It concerns an unemployed woman who'd fallen behind with her rent and applied for a housing benefit grant, which in fact she got. But the council found out that she didn't use all of it for the purpose that they intended. She spent half the money at her local bingo club. So they took her to court over it. Was she guilty of theft or was she not? Think about that. Then tune in next week to see if you were right. Until then, let me say goodnight on behalf of tonight's panel of Barry Cryer, Neris Hughes and Ian Hislop, the Radio Drama Company, who were Joanna Mackey, Ian Target and Richard Tate, the writer and deviser Brad Ashton, legal advisor Doug Cracknell, producer Seanan William, and finally from me too, Shaw Taylor. Bye-bye for now. Bye.